This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. And that is students from the North End Music and Performing Arts Center Gala singing Somewhere Over the Rainbow at the center's 20th anniversary show last week. And accompanying them on the piano, Boston Mayor Michelle Wu, a lifelong pianist. And it is Mondays with the Mayor today. So Michelle Wu, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Hi, Tiziana. Great to be with you.
So it's great to have you. We wanted to start there because when you were with us last, we asked you, hey, you've got a piano in your office. What have you been practicing? And you said that you were getting ready to accompany the kids. So how did it go?
It went fine. They are incredible. Even as you were playing that, I sort of winced a little. I had not performed publicly in about 15 years. So it had been quite a while and they kept me calm. We had actually missed out on all our rehearsal time as well because we had time scheduled earlier that day. But with the unfortunate building collapse over in South Boston, that was not possible. So we were sort of winging it and I followed their lead and they're incredible.
And do you think you will do more of that in the future? Is this the beginning of a new career in accompaniment?
It was in some ways having to practice in my office in the sort of couple days before was really quite relaxing and made me reconnect in a way that I hadn't in some time. But it was also quite a high pressure experience. So I may take a little break.
Take a little break from that now. You know, it is really striking to hear you talk. So, I mean, it was adorable, right? And that's fun. And that's part of being human. And it also really strikes me to hear you say, I was supposed to practice with these kids earlier in the day, right? But instead, there's a building collapse. It is a matter of life and death, not on your plan. You have to be there. That is your life now as mayor. And how do you move from one thing to the next like that? Stay whole and show up in the different spaces, the different ways you have to show up. How do you do that?
Yeah, I mean, some days it feels like in this role, and I would say this is true of so many people who are in public service and not just elected officials, but are city staff and neighborhood services liaisons and housing specialists. There's just so much happening in the world that sometimes by the end of the day, it feels like you've already experienced a week's worth of stress or effort or exhaustion. And for me, I'm pretty resilient. I can keep going. I kind of draw on the ability to connect with people as one of the greatest sources of meaning. And so when I'm able to be in different spaces, it's really about how can I try to connect or open up doors in that moment. And then at the end of the day, I'm quite tired, but we get back up the next morning.
I want to stay there because I noticed that you were at the Louis D. Brown Peace Institute's 26th annual Mother's Day Walk for Peace yesterday. And you're a mom. I'm sure you had Mother's Day plans of your own. And of course, that walk is really to show solidarity with moms who have lost their own children to violence in our community. And I wonder, who did you talk to? Who did you march with yesterday or walk with? And then when you go home and tell your own family as you prepare to celebrate your Mother's Day after that?
We've been part of that walk for many years. And so yesterday, several of us on stage were joking around that, in fact, the chilly wind was was totally fine because we've been there in downpours, we've been there in blistering heat, and it's important to show up because this is an organization that shows up for so many in our communities. These moms have experienced the unspeakable, and then to continue sharing their experience and reopening that trauma to be able to provide space for others to heal and for our community to heal is, I mean, there's nothing like a mother's strength and power. And so I think for our city, it's very, very special that we have Chaplain Clementina Sherry and this organization doing the work and setting the example for how cities across the country really think about providing supports for survivors and building community from a place of healing.
Did you go home and wrap your arms around your own kids after that?
Yeah, we had, we had a couple things in between, and also stopped by the common for the Duckling Day parade. And there was a lot happening all around the city. So just a blessing to be part of it. And I feel so grateful to be able to also have my family part of the journey with me.
I want to move more into the policy space. You caused some other buzz over the last couple of days with your endorsement of Boston City Councilor Ricardo Arroyo for Suffolk County DA. That's over interim DA Kevin Hayden. Hayden had his predecessor support Rachel Rollins as interim. Critics say Arroyo doesn't have enough experience. Why weigh in and why do that now?
I have worked with Councilor Arroyo in many different settings, public and private, on legislation, organizing, on programming and advocating for organizations that do this work, like those that we've already discussed. And, you know, I think many of the comments that we're hearing now are similar to those that we've heard for a long time when in Massachusetts and in Boston, we're trying to present a vision of change that can build community. And in this case, you know, his platform of really reducing crime while healing and providing the resources to build community is exactly what we need. And so the same statements of someone not being old enough or experienced enough, you know, and in some ways, I think that is code and signal for upholding the status quo. And it's clear that the residents of Boston in the mayor's race, in so many issue area campaigns and in other races, have said over and over again that it is time to get down to root causes, put out a clear vision, and follow through.
So code about his age, code about his race, code about it's reform-oriented versus traditional law enforcement-oriented. It's code for what?
Right, that this is a status quo that it hasn't been working for everyone. And so we want to see the types of reforms that former District Attorney Rollins had put into effect, which have been documented through research and data to bring about outcomes that in fact reduce crime and heal communities and stabilize and reduce recidivism. And so that is the approach, and that's the progress that we want to see keep going.
Okay, Mayor Wu, I do want to pepper in as we talk some of the questions that came through our texting platform for you. And I want listeners to know, if you want to become part of our texting group, which is a great way to ask your questions of our guests, you text the word Boston to 617-766-0382. That's the word Boston to 617-766-0382. So Kane Noon of Marblehead wrote, I'm interested in response to recent acts of violence. I'm hesitant to go into the city for brunches, movies, other shows. I'm also interested in the recent construction accidents and the steps for future oversight. I want to stay in the first part of that. And for our listeners who may not know, there have been a group of children, the youngest reportedly 11, who are alleged to have caused several attacks or attacked numerous people in the city and areas around Boston Common, downtown Common, the McDonald's in Roxbury. You've taken a strong position of community support for the kids. So how do you address what Kay is writing in?
We know that safety has to be a baseline for everyone living in Boston, visiting Boston, getting to know our city, and that every single instance of violence or concern, public safety concern, is unacceptable. We also know that overall, Boston is in a different place than many other large cities, where in fact our statistics and the numbers around public safety have been quite low and remain quite low overall. And now again, that's not to say that to make any excuse for any individual instance. But I think sometimes there's an awareness of specific instances that sort of draw larger conclusions, but the data is very clear, and our trends are remaining quite low at this point in terms of the young people who have been the subject of many media stories, and in fact, whose identities never should have been leaked to the media, as they are minors, they are children. there have been services provided and there's been some accountability for adults in their lives. And agencies across the city, state, and county level have been coordinating very closely to make sure that we could wrap around and support there.
So I've seen some of that coordination in the past when I ran Catholic Charities. And as I saw it then, these were multiple agencies literally having conversations about families by name, saying, yes, what's going on in the family? What's going on with the parents? Are there siblings? So can you give us a little more eyes in to how you are providing what you have said you want to do with these wraparound supports for these kids? And does that include the two who have been arrested?
So multiple meetings have taken place, and this is not just about one particular incident or one particular group of young people, but it is the approach of our public safety and public health agencies to really get down to each meeting, each family where they are, and providing targeted resources, whether it's a connection point through the public schools or through a public safety agency or a community organization or a state level agency. And so there have been lots of conversations and meetings to go through what the plan is from each different touch point. And we are in this space now where there's been some accountability for actions that have been taken, but also support through the agencies that are closest.
And do you think that this has been, how much of this do you think has been due to COVID, to the destabilization of our kids through that pandemic?
I think a great deal of need has been deepened in our communities. And in every school that I visit, you hear from the school nurses that the wait list for mental health supports is longer than ever. They're scared that we can't get our young people treatment in the time that they need or in the type of response that they need. And so this is an investment that we are hoping to make at the city level to try to change the dynamic and really provide more resources. We're hoping to use a large chunk of our federal recovery funds to create a new behavioral health center based in the Boston Public Health Commission with a director of behavioral health, which would be a new first-time chief in that role, and to be able to work with all of our healthcare institutions in the area, specifically to recruit, support, and train mental health clinicians and providers of color and multilingual providers who can then be connected with job placements so we can start to fill this staffing shortage as well and make sure that our communities have the availability and access to mental health supports.
It is Mondays with the Mayor. Boston Mayor Michelle Wu is with us answering our questions and yours. Mayor Wu, I will pick up another listener question from our texting community. You promised to separate the functions of planning and economic development into separate departments. When will this happen? That's from Anthony in Boston.
This is still very much the goal as we're putting together the vision for how planning, development, zoning, and all the community needs that we're experiencing now fit together. Our new chief of planning will start in just a couple weeks. Arthur Jemison, who brings experience at the former Boston Redevelopment Authority, as well as at in state government under Governor Patrick and in his most recent role at HUD. So a new set of focus areas will, in addition to this new chief of planning role, the Director of Organizational Transformation will be focused on how we start to bring about the structural reforms as well to how we do business in Boston.
Do you have a time frame in mind once the new leader's in? You know, are you hoping to see some serious restructuring in 6 months, 12 months? You think it's going to take a couple years? How are you thinking about that?
Well, with the pieces that we can move immediately, we're moving immediately. One example is the urban renewal authority that the agency has, and we have put forward a proposal to begin sunsetting that authority and transitioning to a more accountable structure. The new chief of planning will also be serving in a role as chief of planning that will involve connecting with all of the planning staff across other agencies at the city as well, in the transportation department and other areas that are thinking about climate planning. And that salary will come from the city of Boston, and he will not receive an additional salary from the BPDA on top of that. And so as we begin to build out the team and shift the team, we're in some ways, I make the example, the analogy of rebuilding a bridge that needs fixing. And there's a couple of these projects across the city. So you can visualize it, where rather than take the whole thing down and sort of stop everything for an undetermined period of time, you build the new structure alongside, and then you start to transition over. So it will be a period of years as we look to update our zoning code citywide and put in place the planning structures, but you should be able to see and feel some impacts even immediately.
All right, Mayor Wu, I want to talk about the Mission Hill School. Last Thursday night, the Boston School Committee voted to permanently close it. And this follows a recommendation to do so by the superintendent, Brenda Caselius, and a report that found sexual and physical misconduct there, a culture that tolerated bullying. That dated back as far as 2014. You've expressed real dismay over this. What is your top priority in this moment to heal for families and take action based on what happened in the shutting down of a school?
The top priority is to ensure a supportive, healthy, positive transition for the students and educators who are at the school. We are working
about 200 students.
We're working family by family to make sure that, for example, the school district has reserved seats in some of the schools in the immediate vicinity and are working very closely to support those transitions. There were no good choices here. This is a situation from years ago that continued to have ripple effects. And because the accountability and action was so delayed from years ago, we were left with very difficult choices. But ultimately, the decision to move on and support the transition, both for the young people and for educators, including incredible teachers who I've had the chance to speak with and hear from. They have been pouring their everything into trying to heal this community. And again, because of decisions delayed from years ago, this was simply not possible and was not set up for it to be possible. So we're looking to make sure that we all can reconnect and heal.
So this is in the last 8 years, so it is fresh for some. I mean, it lives in today, even though, as you say, it's looking back a number of years now. I got to assume your posture is never again. What is the first step in never again now?
This is a clear call that every single school, every single classroom needs to be a place where our young people are not only safe, but supported. And if there are incidents that arise, there cannot be an excuse or a culture or feeling that it will affect the school's numbers the wrong way if something gets reported. Or, it's just, we need to always have as our leading light the health and safety and well-being of our young people. And I know that is what all of our school leaders are working towards. And we look to make sure, as we're transitioning leadership of the district as well, that this is deeply ingrained in how we are setting the visions and goals and pathway forward.
All right, let's do a couple lightning round questions. They're always fun. Are you ready?
Ready.
Okay, so schizophrenic weather, right? Sometimes it's cold, sometimes it's warm. The big question is, do you switch at some point from hot to iced in your coffee or tea? And have you done it yet?
So I'm not a coffee drinker. I do drink tea. I'll usually go matcha latte. But I actually, it's not for me, it's not a seasonal switch. It's whatever the day is. So I'm happy. If it's summer and somehow it's freezing cold, I will happily take a hot matcha latte and vice versa.
And where's your favorite place to get one? Or do you make it at home?
There's been a couple places. So Pavement has a great one. There's a bunch of coffee shops in and around the Government Center area. I just was at Finista over the weekend, where there's been a unionizing push as well. And so I like to hop around and not picky. So it's my go-to.
All right. I want to talk about those warm summers now for just a minute. You focus on climate resiliency. You've come out with a heat plan. It does a number of things short term, for example, pop-up cooling kits for public city events or nonprofit organizations, a grant program for property owners on cool roofs. What is the sort of imperative this summer as you start to lay down your heat plan and change the way the city is supporting, especially environmental justice communities in extreme heat?
The plan is really about addressing the fact that even though we know what to do in the big picture, that many of these changes will take time and the need is here right now. And so as we're looking to grow our urban tree canopy and make sure there's green everywhere, which helps take the temperature down, or that buildings are resilient and our energy codes are hit the right standards, there are, you know, just in a couple weeks or even next week, there's going to be a pretty warm day and it will go up from there. And just a couple weeks from now, our young people are in school buildings that often don't have HVAC systems that are modern. And so we need to be responsive to the urgent needs as well. And in some ways, what Boston had been doing for a while wasn't necessarily serving communities or seeing the uptake, right? The traditional strategy had been we open up cooling centers, and they're located either at a community center or other spaces. But even on very high heat days, very hot days, we were not seeing a lot of seniors or other residents coming in to spend the day there. And so we're trying to be responsive and look at what both the urgent timeframes are, but also how best to match what will actually work for people in Boston.
Let's talk about another group of vulnerable residents, which is the people who have been congregating in theory around Massachusetts Avenue and Mount Nyakass Boulevard, where there's been a real intersection of homelessness, mental health, and addiction. In December, the city opened an engagement center there. Last week, reporter Deb Becker was on air talking about how the center had closed for a few days after a series of stabbings in the area. She's now gotten word from those providing aid that the center will be closed for 2 weeks. Is that the case, and why the extension of the period of time that it's closed?
The winter push to make sure that as many of the long-term residents of the former encampments were connected to housing was urgent, and it was about addressing a humanitarian crisis of people living in tents with no heat or hot water in very dangerous conditions. While we continue to see great progress from that push and have currently, I think about 180 residents, former residents of the encampments, are now in low-threshold supportive housing, accessing treatment and care, and a number of whom have already moved from this low threshold transitional housing into permanent housing in other parts of the state. We continue to see with the warming weather, large crowds gathering, and that has been difficult for public safety. It's been difficult because there are other issues that are connected to crowds. There's been some very troubling
So is it not safe?
Drug trafficking.
Not safe to have the center open?
The staff at the center and at the Boston Public Health Commission are working to provide resources and programming so that we can increase access across the city and not have everything concentrated in one place. And so in the immediate term, for the health and well-being and safety of everyone involved, the decision was made to create some space, but we look to expand access to those services and make sure that there's not only housing, but the ability for transportation access with the shuttle system that we've set up to connect people to services throughout the day, and also for treatment and the engagement center and the services provided there to be available in other parts of the city and start to decentralize some of this.
So am I hearing you say, and I'm sorry, we have to do this very quickly, but am I hearing you say that the engagement center may not reopen in its current form?
I'm not saying that. I believe that we are looking to add spots in different parts around the city or to coordinate with service providers who are already up and running in different parts in the city and to get transportation more closely coordinated. But we're working very quickly on that and want to make sure that in all parts of the city that there's safety and that we can begin to expand the access and decentralize.
Okay, that is Boston Mayor Michelle Wu with Mondays with the Mayor. Mayor Wu, always great to have you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
We'll talk to you again next month.